Hi, this is Barry Liss at INFORM, the Institute for Operations Research and Management Sciences. You're listening to Science of Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. In today's segment, we talk to Dr. Michael P. Johnson of the University of Massachusetts, Boston. Dr. Johnson's the author of the new book, Community-Based Operations Research. We're broadcasting from the fall 2011 INFORM's annual meeting in Charlotte, North Carolina. Professor Johnson, an expert on using mathematical techniques in public policy, has been chairing sessions of the conference. He's presented papers on housing at community-based OR. Professor, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you, Barry Liss. Thank you for having me.
America's still recovering from a recession that included a collapse of the real estate market. We're still seeing a high rate of foreclosures. How badly are foreclosures affecting neighborhoods and municipalities?
Foreclosures have devastated many neighborhoods, but not just the neighborhoods you would normally imagine. Inner city neighborhoods that had traditionally fragile housing markets and low-income families, but also suburban and exurban neighborhoods with houses that were bought by middle-class families that were overextended. The housing economy is hurt very badly throughout the country.
You've presented a paper suggesting that local governments purchase foreclosed properties. How does that help?
In fragile housing markets, in strong and fragile markets, there are many competitors to purchasing housing units. Ordinary families with their own funds, community development corporations seeking housing for community stabilization and economic development, as well as for-profit speculators who often seek the cheapest housing that they can turn over with minimum investment to extract maximum profit.
These are slumlords in another parlance, or not quite?
You can call them slumlords, but they operate in flippers, people who work in many different neighborhoods. These private speculators pose a significant danger to many neighborhoods. They can buy very quickly. They have lots of cash. They can buy in high volumes. They can convert housing very quickly, and their primary purpose is to make money, not to improve the lives of residents or to stabilize neighborhoods. They are a primary competitor to community development corporations.
And local governments can purchase foreclosed properties and try to stabilize the neighborhood?
Yes, local governments can purchase properties, but it is often very difficult. Housing that is foreclosed are owned by banks and other financial institutions. The paper trail and the legal issues related to foreclosed housing is very difficult. In one block, five different houses could be owned by five different lenders at different stages of foreclosure. It is very difficult technically and financially for community development corporations and municipalities to untangle the legal chain and to acquire housing. It is actually much easier for speculators to do the same.
You focus not on single-family homes, but on apartment houses and multifamily homes. What's the approach that you look at in your research?
I look at all kinds of housing. My primary concern is the housing that predominates in urban and inner city neighborhoods, and these housing units tend to be multifamily units. In Boston, where I've concentrated my work, many distressed communities are dominated by small three-unit buildings that we call triple-deckers that have traditionally been the entry point for owner-renters.
And you did your research in Lowell, Mass. Tell us about Lowell and the real estate problems that exist over there.
Lowell is representative of a number of smaller cities that are former mill towns. They had an industrial manufacturing base that has started to decline over 70 years ago. Many of these cities are also gateway cities. They have attracted low-income immigrants from a variety of countries, especially in Central and South America. They represent economic opportunity for many families, but their housing markets are distressed, and they are plagued by many of the same issues that we see in larger urban areas, crime, vandalism, delinquency, and so forth.
You're listening to Science of Better with Barry List. Today's guest, Professor Michael Johnson, is talking about what communities can do to cope with foreclosures.
You concentrated on 57 specific properties. This gets a little bit wonky, but how did you decide to study them? How did you choose them?
We chose multifamily units that were known to be in foreclosure, and we gathered data from the local registry of deeds. One of our co-authors has a significant community development corporation experience, and he ensured that the properties in our sample were representative of the larger universe of multifamily foreclosed units and units at risk for foreclosure that could be acquired by a community development corporation working in Lowell.
When working on a housing problem like this, you need one strategy or one approach for developers and another for voters and the public to try to come up with a solution to the problem that works for everyone. What was your strategy?
My strategy was to recognize that there are multiple values or goals at work in the housing, the foreclosed housing acquisition and redevelopment process. One goal from a CDC's perspective is to purchase housing.
CDC is
Community Development Corporation. So one goal from the Community Development Corporation's perspective is to acquire and redevelop housing that it thinks will most contribute to stabilization and revitalization of communities. One measure of this contribution might be the amount of property value losses that would be averted were a particular property to be acquired. Another kind of measure would be the perceived quality or utility that a particular unit might confer on a family that occupies that unit, and that's a function of the proximity of that unit to nearby amenity-rich neighborhoods. Another concern of community development corporations is efficiently redeveloping multiple units. Construction and redevelopment is very capital and time intensive, and CDCs often do better with projects that are located right close to each other. So that was another objective. A third concern for community development corporations is ensuring that they have support of neighborhood residents for their redevelopment initiatives. One way to...
And I should ask, redevelopment means purchasing properties so that families can move in at an affordable price, affordable rental.
Right. Redevelopment means acquiring properties and redeveloping them to a high level of quality and deciding whether these properties should be sold to families or rented out to families where the Community Development Corporation, the CDC, would be the property manager.
Got it.
Right. So a third concern of a community development corporation is ensuring buy-in or support from local residents. Residents who are in the middle of the foreclosed housing crisis and are facing, who live in distressed communities, naturally want to be sure that their block, their part of the neighborhood, gets its fair share of community development investments. Therefore, we should ensure that a redevelopment strategy is seen as equitable across all of the neighborhoods in our study area.
Now, take us back a little bit to the science you applied, and this is an operations research podcast, and speaking to our listeners who may not be scientists, though, tell us about the decision model you use. What's a knapsack problem? How did you adapt it to this kind of model to conduct your research?
Well, the first thing I should say is that my work is inspired by the commitment and the very hard work of community development professionals across the nation. These people work in distressed communities at low pay with a commitment to redevelopment, to equity, and to social justice and building human capital. These people are real estate experts, and they know very well how to acquire individual units, how to buy them, how to manage the construction process, and how to resell them. However, the scope of the foreclosed housing problem is so vast that a typical community development corporation faces many more opportunities for property acquisition and redevelopment than they can address all at once with the funds they have available. Therefore, they need to make smart decisions about how to use limited funds for acquisition and redevelopment.
And that's where researchers like you come in.
When you have lots of alternatives, limited resources, ambiguous criteria for making decisions, and on-the-ground expertise, then that's a recipe for public sector-focused decision science.
This is Barry List of Informs, and we're talking today with Michael Johnson of UMass Boston about using math models to help public policy programs.
You discussed something in your study called the foreclosed housing redevelopment model. What is it? How did it work in this situation?
There are lots of ways to apply decision modeling to foreclosed housing redevelopment, and I'll talk about three. One is a strategic approach where we ask what kinds of properties in which neighborhoods should a community development corporation, for example, seek to acquire over time to ensure neighborhood redevelopment. This is a problem with multiple objectives, many decision variables, and inherent uncertainty. I solved a version of this problem under certainty, that is, ignoring the uncertainty associated with volatile housing markets, for my for the 2010 paper that you're referring to. CDCs, however, make a variety of decisions related to property acquisition. Another one goes like this. An individual CDC may face many opportunities to purchase housing over a fairly short period of time. Housing units become available as they go to auction or as they enter real estate owned or REO status or other stages in the foreclosed process. A CDC must ask, should they attempt to acquire this unit for redevelopment in the future? This problem is difficult because of competition, especially from private speculators, and we spoke about this previously, who can act very quickly. Another problem is assembling financing to make these bids. So this problem asks, should a community development corporation attempt to acquire a unit that has become available or wait for another unit to become available in the future? If a CDC acts too quickly, it can waste lots of time on unsuccessful bids, or it can be so successful that it acquires a stable of units that are too expensive to develop quickly. So this is a very short-term decision problem. A third decision problem that we've looked at asks, what are the values associated with real estate development generally? There are many goals that CDCs have, and it's not always clear how to identify these goals, to quantify achievement towards these goals, to assess trade-offs among these goals, and to associate the impacts of particular acquisition strategies on perceived achievement of these goals. This is an application of the field called value-focused thinking, which Ralph Keeney, a distinguished member of Informs, developed more than 20 years ago. So these three problems, these three models, are all useful for foreclosed housing acquisition and redevelopment.
Were there a few specific guidelines that were given to the CDCs that you studied?
The 2010 paper that you're referring to was a case study paper that was not connected with a particular community development corporation as a client. So it was speculative in the sense that it was a proof of concept for a decision modeling approach that CDCs could potentially apply to their own operations. More recently, I have worked with colleagues at University of Massachusetts Lowell and UMass Amherst on a project funded by the National Science Foundation to extend the work in this paper to real-life community development corporations in order to develop models that are customized to the needs of these CDCs and to assess, if possible, the real-life impact of these models on CDC operations and communities and the communities that they serve. So to answer to your question, recently we have engaged with two community development corporations in the Boston area, and we have learned a number of specific facts that have guided our modeling. One is that bidding for properties is difficult. The rate of success is low, and that CDCs don't generally have reliable quantitative measures of the potential impacts of their acquisitions. Therefore, they have helped us understand that a bidding model would be very useful for them. And the cost of acquisitions is essential.
And a bidding model is something that you will turn your attention to in the future?
I'm working with Professor Sinai Solak of UMass Amherst on this bidding model right now, and he actually presented it yesterday.
Great. Final question, coming back to the national real estate fallout from the recession, the Great Recession. New York Times reporter Gretchen Morgenson, along with critics in the Republican Party and the Tea Party, have pointed blame at Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the U.S. Congress of the 1990s for encouraging the approach that everyone, even those with low income, should be entitled to own a house. Have you done research in this area? What is your take on this?
Well, I yield to many housing experts who have weighed in on this, and one in particular is Professor Dan Immergluck of Georgia Tech, but there are many others as well. The consensus of the housing experts that I know and that I follow is that the foreclosure crisis at its root was brought about by an assumption that increases in housing ownership by everyone in the U.S. was an unambiguous good for society. Up until a few years ago, it was fairly difficult to find researchers who would assert and quantify the downsides of home ownership. Many of the lenders in our country, aside from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, believed that the run-up in housing prices would continue into the foreseeable future. They thought that housing prices defied the laws of economic gravity, and yet there have been booms and busts in many areas of our economy over the past 50 or 60 years. So lending criteria were relaxed for many different borrowers, middle income, upper income, and lower income. Investments were made in infrastructure to build exurban communities far from urban centers that were economically and ecologically unsustainable. And the financial markets devised many ways to resell mortgages and to repackage mortgages that objectively had a higher than acceptable risk of foreclosure as high quality investments, repackaging junk as A-plus bonds. There are many actors at fault for the foreclosure crisis. The role of organizations that that have encouraged homeownership among low-income families is, in my opinion, quite low on the list.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Dr. Michael Johnson of UMass Boston. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by Informs, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.